We're doing okay.
Okay, Mr. Chair, the floor is yours.
Okay, welcome to the Thursday, November 5th, 2020 regular meeting of the Harbor Advisory Board. It's being held via teleconference. And let's take a roll, please, to establish the quorum.
Chair Reisner?
Here.
Vice Chair Blackford?
You're muted, Mark.
You're muted. Unmute, please.
Never unmute, everybody.
Jeremiah, you're muted.
Oh, there we go. Present.
Present.
Member Dowdy? He was here. Okay. Member Hansen? Here. Member McClish? Member O'Brien?
Present.
Member Myerson?
Present.
We have a quorum, so we'll call the meeting to order and we'll begin with a moment of silence as we contemplate all of the wonderful things that are happening in the world today. Thank you. So, Lori, if you'd like to put the flag up. And Charisse, you want to do the pledge for us?
Okay. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands.
One nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Wow, that was challenging. Okay, so is Ms. McPherson with us this evening?
Mr. Chair, we do have one person on a phone line with the number ending in 250. I'm not sure who that is, but...
Well, we'll get to that in public comment, I guess.
Okay.
So we are going to move through, and does the board have any presentations or announcements? We'll start with Mark. Anything?
No, sir. Nothing today.
Okay. Lynn?
Yes, the Yacht Club has begun having some races with observing protocols for COVID as much as possible, but we are having both a bay race this Saturday and an ocean race this Sunday, so there will be some action on the water, weather permitting.
How many participants are anticipated?
For the bay races, we generally get anywhere from 6 to 12 or 15. The ocean races are not nearly that big. We're lucky to get 3 to 5, but I would invite anybody out there who has an ocean-going sailboat and wants to participate to call the Yacht Club and see if it meets PHRF requirements.
What is the course in the ocean?
That is to be determined depending on weather conditions on the day. We have two buoys that we use. Unfortunately, we're now using virtual marks. Even in races, we've got virtual everything. It's a Zoom race, not quite. But anyway, we used to use the old radar, and so we have one that is now approximately 2 miles out from Morro Bay 1 to the northwest. And we have a second one, which is in the approximate location of the old 18 EB, a mile and a half up the beach from number one.
Awesome.
And then we also use Mouse Rock Buoy and Constantine. And sometimes Bouchon.
That's a tight course.
Well, we'll see what the wind does.
Sure. Jean, are you with us? Charisse, any announcements?
No, not at this time.
Okay. Dana's not with us. Jeremiah, any announcements? Anything you'd like to tell us in terms of the Morbay Commercial Fishermen's Organization?
Yeah, thank you very much, Ron. We just returned from albacore fishing up in Oregon and Washington. There was very little in California, although this year there was probably more than the albacore up north than there has been in the last few years. The fish were a very nice size, good grade on them, although we suffered price-wise as our industry, like so many industries in the world, have suffered with the COVID situation. Our prices were down about 20%, which is... That money, when we go down and business people understand this, that money comes directly out of our net profit, because our costs are generally fixed costs and so forth. So when it's all said and done, that 20% was basically out of the fisherman's paycheck. So it was a fairly good season. As far as we had a fairly good season. Lots of the people did not. The reason being, the guys from California got stuck on the way up there. They couldn't get up north for approximately 2 weeks early on because of the weather. We fortunately had left early this year and were up there and got to take advantage of the extra time on the grounds. The water was cold and a boat had to travel over 150 miles from port to access the fish for the first couple of months. The water did move in. By the time the warm water moved into the beach, the albacore had all but left. And the weather turned bad, so nobody was able to take much advantage of that. While we were gone this summer, there was fish sales off the boat here in Morro Bay. And in talking to some of the people who participated in these sales, they were happy. The sales were good, available on the docks this year. Morro Bay isn't a big port for selling off the boat. Although this year there seemed to be more interest, we're happy to see that. It gives it gives the people in the community an opportunity to get a fresh product right from the boat, get to know their fishermen too. But this summer, rock cod, prawns, salmon, some albacore at the end of the year. So that was it was a good deal. I'm glad that got underway here, and hopefully it'll continue in the future. And it's of course been a big help with COVID, and by the way, masks and distances were all maintained. Whereas Dungeness crab will be the next season opener. And that usually opens the middle of this month. But we've had a delay already, and it's been delayed at this time till December 1st. So we'll see how that goes. That's another fishery that suffered severely as far as prices go, because we've lost China. China was a big importer of Dungeness crab from the West Coast. And obviously, we're not participating any longer. So that was a very, very tough hit for the crabbers. So yeah, hopefully that will, hopefully they'll get underway by December 1st. It's sad to lose the Thanksgiving market, but it's the way it is, I guess. So the big markets for Dungeness, it is, particularly in years we don't have exports to the degree that we've had them in the past, they rely on holiday sales, Thanksgiving, Christmas, New Year's, so forth. That's a big, big thing for the crab industry. So because so much fish, it goes to restaurants, the industry, have taken a particularly hard hit because, as we all know, the restaurants are suffering worse than we are, I'm sure. But so our markets have been depleted severely. The federal government has assisted many of the fisheries, depending on what you fish for and your history and so forth and so on. The federal government has given us a small stipend to assist with some of our losses. The state government was given $18 million to distribute to the fishing industries 6 months ago, and as far as I know, none of that money has been distributed, so we're still waiting for the Department of Fish and Wildlife to get off their butt. And I think that is about it for now. Let's see. Yeah, that's about it for now. Thank you.
Jeremiah, when the Morro Bay Commercial Fishermen's Organization contacts Fish and Wildlife asking them when they're going to distribute the $18 million, what is the response?
They're all backed up. And they haven't, they're just not ready.
Okay. Did Gene, did you join us? No. Okay. Well, we've made it through. Thank you. So that brings us to public comment. Do we have any public comment this evening? Anybody got their hand up?
Mr. Chair, we have one person in the queue with the number ending in 250. Their hand is not raised, but they're on the phone. So if they do want to speak, they can hit *9 and that will raise their hand.
Okay, well, we'll give a moment for that. I guess that's not going to take place. So,
Lori was asking if this could possibly
be Gene. Say it again, please.
Lori was asking if this, they just raised their hand, so I'm going to allow them to talk. Caller, you are on the line. Please unmute yourself.
All right, can you hear me now?
Oh, Bill.
Hello? Yeah, this is Bill LaFay. I do apologize.
Yeah.
This is my first Zoom meeting, and apparently either I'm inept, which is probably the terminology, or I don't have a camera or whatever the case may be, but I did want to share on a new business, on a new goal that we're trying to do for the Harbor Department.
Bill, this is Ron. This is Ron Reisner. We're going to work through our consent agenda first, which is A1 and A2, which will not take terribly long. And then you are a business item, B5, and we, with the permission of the board, we'll move you up to B1. That we're not quite ready. Is that okay with you?
Yeah, that's fine. So I can just stay on like I am right now?
That would be wonderful.
And that's what I'll do.
Okay. So A1, approval of the minutes from the Harbor Advisory Board meeting held on September 3 of this year. Are there any comments or corrections from the board? Hearing none, need a motion to approve.
I move to approve the minutes from the Harbor Advisory Board meeting held on September 3rd.
Thank you. Is there a second?
I will second.
Okay. Moved and seconded. Any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
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 All those opposed say nay. Hearing none, they are approved. That brings us to A2, which is the Harbor Department status report. Mr. Endersby?
Yes. Run consent, unless you want, unless there's somebody who wants to pull it for discussion, we just approve it.
I understand. I'm just giving you an opportunity.
Okay. Unless somebody has a question or comment or wants some clarification on something, I have nothing to add to.
Is there anybody in the board that would like to pull A2?
I would like to pull A2, please.
Okay.
Not the whole thing, just ask a question about it.
Please, go right ahead.
Okay, so with recent council activity, it says that the Libertine was granted a 3-year master lease agreement interim. I don't know why, but that's new to me. Can you explain for the public that's watching right now or in the future how that transpired, and are they going to be making any changes to the property in that 3-year part agreement?
Sure. So the previous leaseholder, it was on a 3-year short-term lease, predicated on some potential redevelopment that owner decided not to pursue and decided to let the lease revert back to the city. The subtenant, Libertine Brewing, wanted to stay on as a tenant and continue on and expressed interest to the council. I think we went to them in closed session at least once with negotiating on the lease terms for a short-term lease, and they are planning on doing a redevelopment of that site. I can't give you much detail about that yet because they're still developing it, but that lease that they're on, it's an interim 3-year lease. Council did not want to go put it out to bid. And this was probably back in, maybe June or July that we took it to council. Just the nature of COVID and the economy and everything else, it's not time to put things out to bid. So we entered into a short-term lease agreement with the Libertine Brewing folks. And in that, there is a timeline by which they have to submit a plan for redeveloping and how they want to continue on with the site. So I don't have the exact timelines on when that is. It's sometime this spring, I believe. They have to have a plan that we'll bring to the city council, and we'll do a consent to landowner approval, assuming the council accepts it and wants to move forward and go through the standard COL process, and then they'll submit the plans to community development and go through the normal process like you did with your site next door.
Okay, but the owner is now a different entity?
Correct.
Okay.
The owner under the previous leaseholder was under an LLC under Burt Caldwell. It's now under correct me if I'm wrong, Laurie, I think it's just a standard corp. Incorporated Libertine Brewing Company, Inc.
So just, I think what, Therese, maybe what you're thinking is, so Burt's lease expired, and so a new lease started. Is that what the changeover?
With him, because even though it's a Libertine pub, there's a separate entity that's Libertine that has a Libertine in San Luis Obispo and one in Avila Beach. Is it that entity, or is it just a different a corporation with?
No, I believe it's the same owner, same entity.
As the ones in the other two areas.
In SLO, yeah, in Avalon.
So they have interest in doing changes. Because usually with all leases, they have to make they have to put the necessary money into it in order to get a certain amount of time on a lease.
So right. Well, it's a 3-year knowing, I mean, you went through the permitting process. It's going to take at least to get through some sort of an approval of a major redevelopment. So it's a short-term lease. It's basically to get them time to put together a proposal, draw it up, you know, submit the plans, get consent to landowner, and then go through the city concept plan approval process, and then through the coastal development process, and then negotiate a new long-term lease based on whatever the redevelopment ends up being.
Wow, because I thought everything in that situation had to go through an RFP process. I thought that's what we, if it was going to change different master lease holders.
No? If you're talking about the lease policy, no. I mean, it didn't say you absolutely had to do an RFP process.
Okay.
It gives the city the ability. I think the main time you wouldn't do that is you've got an existing leaseholder that has a good plan and a good track record, and why wouldn't you keep them there?
Right. All right.
Well, Charisse, I had the same misunderstanding.
That's.
Okay.
There's one other thing. Consent of council adopted on October 13th. Council adopted a conditional consent of landowner. It says modest lease site redevelopment proposal for Dutchman Seafood. What kind of changes are they going to be making? Can that be talked about?
Yeah. The Dutchman Seafood House. The main one. So, you know, that on the north end, they've got that pier, right, that used to have the slime meal buyer out there. He's gone. That pier is in pretty bad shape. It's, you know, they did some work to it a few years ago, fixed up some pilings, but it needs a lot more work. A fish buyer in the middle of the Embarcadero there doesn't work very well. And they don't have a fish buyer there anymore anyhow. So the main thing they're doing is pulling back that pier. They're going to still use a large chunk of it for a public view deck. And then they're going to connect through from the Roses side all the way through with the Harbor Walk, all the way through to the far side, to the street end. So where there's no connectivity now. So it'll be a gap filler for the Harbor Walk, for the 10-foot wide Harbor Walk. The unit that the fish buyer's in now is going to get some modification to turn it into probably retail of some sort. And that back patio area that's kind of that glassed in area, like kind of between and behind Dolphin and the main building that's seating right now, they're going to open that up to public. That's part of they'll be part of the Harbor Walk area in through the back.
Okay. So that property now will have the continuing Harbor Walk along the lateral axis.
Yeah. You'll be able to connect from Roses on by. And Roses is, you know, Roses is part of their hotel room conversion. They're modifying the Harbor Walk on the north side of theirs to connect better to the street end. So there'll be a good connection all the way through there. And I think they're proposing to move some of their seating to the front end on the street side, where they've got a fair amount of open space, and replicate some of that outdoor seating back there because it's working okay for them in COVID. So.
Right.
And some other upgrades, you know, other modernization, you know, some code upgrade stuff.
Gotcha. So the last thing, it's not actually in here, but I was wondering, because I was down by the rock, what's the fencing that is right at the beginning of the rock walkway as you're leaving Coast Guards? What is that?
That's the Coast Guard project. They're getting ready to embark on their building, about 800 square feet under the backside of their building. All the major utilities go under their construction site, their new building, so they've got to move those utilities out. That's the biggest part of the project. So they're going to be digging a big trench behind our office in the Coast Guard station, redoing the utilities. And so that fencing is basically their storage and lay down and office trailer yard is back in there. We didn't put it in where the power plant is, the intake building, because that's the power plant's property, and we can only use that for public parking, so we had to move it a little further north.
Okay, thanks for the info.
Well, as long as the agenda item is pulled, does anybody else have anything that they would like to hear about? Eric, can you give us, to the extent that there is such a thing, an update on the schedule for the Three Stacks and a Rock project?
Schedule, they've got their plans into plan check right now. We as a city, as the building owner, I've got some sewer lateral work to get done and also some column work to do inside that building that I'm working on getting bids and contracting on right now. So they're planning on moving forward and starting to do their construction to add restrooms and sprinklers and all sorts of things and brewing space on the inside. They'll probably get going on that. You know, well, they're hoping sometime this month, but most likely into December. So it's moving forward.
When will the city be completed with its obligations? Physical.
I couldn't tell you that yet, right now. Working on contracting right now.
Okay. And for the benefit of those that don't know, moving down in your report, can you describe the 9192 and 9192 West site? Which site is that, please?
It should be Anderson Inn. Lori, is that right?
You see me?
Oh, there's Gene.
Hey, Gene.
Hey.
Can't see you. I can hear you.
Okay, well, I'm trying to figure out how you can see me.
9192 is the Anderson Inn site.
Right.
They found a buyer. They've had it for sale for a while. A couple of sales fell through that the city approved, and so they've got a new buyer, and that buyer is working forward to consummating that deal. It's the Costecas who own the Estero Inn down at the other end.
Hmm. And does that site include the galley restaurant portion?
Yeah. The new owners will assume those leases and those operators there.
Mm-hmm.
The galley restaurant and the gallery in the front.
Okay. Anything else from the board on A2? Okay, we are received and filed.
Still got to approve it.
Oh.
Make a motion to approve item A2.
Second.
Thank you. Moved and seconded. Any discussion? Hearing none. All in favor? Aye.
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 Opposed? None. Approved. Received and filed. Brings us to our business items, and we have five business items, and with the board's approval, I would like to bring B5 up to the front of the agenda. Are there any objections to that?
Nope.
Hearing none, we're on B5, and B5 is, as I scramble for the description, give me just a second. B5 is an update on the activities and fundraising efforts of the Friends of the Morro Bay Harbor Department. And we have the president of that organization with us this evening, Mr. LaFay, Bill LaFay. Bill, you're on.
Okay, can you guys hear me?
We can, but you might want to speak up just a little bit.
Okay, so this is Bill LaFay. Thank you very much for inviting me tonight. What I wanted to do tonight is introduce myself, and I know most of the people here. Lori just put up a screen, is that the Friends of the Morro Bay Harbor Department has been tasked by the Harbor department to try to raise $100,000 to refurbish a boat that we're currently in negotiations of buying from Port San Luis. So our task, my task, and the friend's task is to try to raise about $100,000 to refurbish that boat to the specifications that we would like to have it for the Morro Bay Harbor. So as of today, we've done a little bit of fundraising. You might have seen some advertisements in the paper. Neil Farrell was kind enough to write about what we're attempting to do. We're about 15% of our goal right now. We're at $15,000. And I hope that with an extended campaign that myself and Eric and some of the friends are doing right now, that we will be able to give you a little update on a later date. But pretty much, it's straightforward. The city of Morro Bay, as everyone knows, the Harbor Department knows, I was on the Harbor Department for 7 years, is just stretched thin, and there's just no money for capital improvements. We're attempting to buy this used boat, which I think will be just very good for us here at Morro Bay. And instead of paying $450,000 for a new boat, it's probably going to cost us in the vicinity of about $200,000 once we're done. So that's our goal, and that's what I'm attempting to do to help the Harbor Department. Is there any questions?
Yeah, Bill.
I'm
just curious, and it's a great opportunity, a great thing to contribute to. I'm curious, does that boat currently have a fire monitor aboard?
Eric?
Yeah, Jeremiah does, and I can probably add a little more. We got a grant from Boating and Waterways to purchase the boat. They're getting the boat that they're replacing it with. Basically, they're not replacing it because it's worn out or broken down or it's not a good boat. It doesn't suit their needs due to the conditions there. They basically need a rubber-sided boat because they bounce around so much because it's open ocean. So they're changing their fleet up. So we got a grant from Boating and Waterways to purchase it, and their new boat gets delivered at the end of this year. So once they get their new boat, they'll be basically signing over the pink slip to us when we give them the money, the grant money. It does have a monitor. It does have a system. The boat's, 15-odd years old. It's an interestingly system run off the drive engines. I know, Ron, you had experience with it, if I'm explaining it right. It's a hydraulic system that uses hydraulic pressure to run water pumps. It's not the most efficient thing in the world, but that's one of the major attributes this new boat is going to need, is a good solid firefighting system. We'll be looking towards
that. How about the main propulsion? I'm sure it's got twin engines. How are they in reasonable condition, Eric?
Twin diesels, they're done. They're old. I forget the exact type. Ron might chime in, but they'll suit our needs for now to get the boat in the fleet and have it as a usable boat. But they're going to need a lot of maintenance. They're old, they're tired. We're intending to replace them with the same engines we have in our existing new boat for fleet consistency and parts interchangeability. So that's one of the impetuses of the $100,000 friends fundraising campaign is we're between the engines and the fire system and some structural modifications to the cabin and whatnot. It's a good $150,000 project. So we're seeking.
Oh, so that's why I asked to begin with was $100,000 if we don't have a monitor system, the type of which we need, such as its own hydraulic system, run off its own engine.
Yeah, that's what we've got in both our other boats is a dedicated engine, which is
Roger.
That would cost a lot of money. That would increase the cost of the project considerably. Right now, it's a power takeoff. My professional opinion is there's not, given how infrequently the monitors are used in Morro Bay, although they are exercised by the department on a regular basis, I don't see any reason. I don't see any reason not to continue with the power takeoff concept, unless there's more money available. We also have space issues. The pump assembly is in the boat now. But that's just my opinion. It doesn't mean I'm correct about any of that. So, Eric, between you and Bill, go ahead.
So does the whole design fit Morro Bay? Yes.
Yeah, it's a Radden. It's a Don Radden boat.
It's a Radden. Okay, that's good. I didn't know that. Okay.
The 26.
Yeah. If you go on our website, Gene, you'll see the picture of the boat, and it's a Radden boat. Yes.
Okay, that's fine. That's what I wanted to know.
Okay.
So, Bill, between you and Eric, why don't you let us and the public know, please, in whatever order you choose, what are the benefits to the city from the acquisition and refit of this vessel, and what, in short term, are the most significant refit requirements?
You know, I'm probably not as technically oriented as Eric, and I'm going to refer to him. Eric, will you start that off, please?
Sure, and I don't know, Ron, if I'll hit all your points in the order you did them in, but I'll do my best. So public safety in our department is obviously, you know, one of our number one priorities, and that includes the bay and harbor and ocean and beach, and that requires a patrol boat of various and capabilities, including firefighting and seaworthiness and you know, able to carry, you know, a lot of gear, and there's only certain design boats that are very good at that can do it efficiently. And we purchased a new patrol boat, replaced one of our older patrol boats going on about 7 years ago now, and total price was about $425,000. Well, as Bill said earlier, you know, we're the whole city strapped for cash, and you know, there's not a lot of money going around, as we know, in our capital program to pay for things like that. So we've been over the last, and then, you know, 3 or 4 years ago on our other twin engine belt. So, and then really to operate effectively and safely, we need two vessels. One, you know, double vessels for backup, safety backup in inclement weather or bad conditions or when storms move through, and two, when the boat's down for maintenance. Every once in a while, you got to take something out of the water and do some repairs and standard routine maintenance, or sometimes things fail catastrophically. And so we need a backup. Our current backup boat is 30 some odd years old. It's been great, saved a ton of lives and a lot of property, but it had a major structural failure several years ago. And its days are numbered. It needs to be retired. And so we've been looking for the last few years and figuring out how to replace that boat. And then started talking to Port San Luis probably about 5 or 6 years ago. And as they were starting to think about their fleet as well. And then over the last year, things started aligning and it started to work out as a win-win for us to assume their boat. They get a little bit of money out of it because they've got funding issues of their own. And it works for us. It's the type of boat we want, Radden. And it'll enable us to continue our public safety mission safely and still execute the things we need to execute on the water.
Okay, which brings us to, given that this boat is going to be acquired, what does it need?
So as I stated earlier, the hull is sound. It's in good shape. They've maintained it well. It's engines are original. They're diesel. good back in the day. It was probably underpowered when it was started, but the engines are old and worn out, and parts are hard, if not impossible, to find anymore. So it's time for the engines to go. So it's going to need a complete repower with the engines and the power, you know, the power drive package, you know, with the out drives or the propeller systems that run the engines or that run off the engines. Fire system, as you said, you know, it may be reusable, some sort of a power takeoff system. We'll have to get it and really evaluate that and see how that works. So electronics upgrades, it's got the original old electronics on it, so we'll need to put some new electronics on it, probably do some wiring upgrades. And then some structural modifications to the, it's got an enclosed cabin unlike what we have and what we're used to, which is fine. Unfortunately, it appears to, they must not have had very tall people in their Harbor Patrol ranks when the boat was built, because tall guys like me hit our head on the top of the cabin when we're driving it. So we're going to have to do some modification to the floor to get a little more headroom in there. So a few little structural modifications, but mainly the engines, which are probably, you know, $40,000 each, $45,000 each as a package. And so that's the biggest financial nut to crack, and then figuring out how to get the fire system usable and what we need, and then, like I say, going electronics and other things.
Eric?
Change the paint color. It's not blue.
Well, one of the reasons that I started the conversation and asking about the fire monitors and so forth was I was wondering if $100,000 might be a little light. So I was wondering.
Well, I think if you're going to do the fire and everything like that, up to how you would want to do that, you're probably looking at probably $180,000, to be honest with you.
Well, there wouldn't be that much if you use the existing, you know,
right.
Recommend the existing system. It would still cost money to connect, probably want to get a new, I would think, and maybe a new hydraulic pump. I don't know how much that one's been used, probably not much.
Yeah, I mean, it's something we need to
$120,000 it might. So I was just thinking that you don't want to fall short. So why not shoot it up to $120,000?
Well, I think that.
Go ahead, Eric. I was going to say.
Well,
go, Bill. You go.
I think that we do have some reserves, if you look at your budget, of some money that the city will contribute to this whole project. I mean, this is a project where we're getting a grant of $85,000. We're also continually applying for more grants right now as we move forward here. So we're hoping that with the $100,000 and with other opportunities to acquire money, that we will have that 120 that you say, Jeremiah, or maybe a little bit more, to have a first-class boat here in our harbor here within the next year.
Yeah, that's exactly. I think you know, 100,000 is a pretty lofty goal, and I'm so appreciative that Bill and the friends are going after it, but we've got to be realistic. We're looking at we've already contacted the cable committee. We're going to be looking at potential cable committee granting, USDA. We're filling out applications for USDA granting. And we do have some funding in our equipment fund, $30,000 or $40,000 in our equipment replacement fund. So we've got some money we're going to throw out it to. So between all those funding sources, we're confident that we'll be able to put together what we need.
Right. And my next question for Bill was going to be, what are the plans, Bill? What are your fundraising plans?
As you all know, you know, it's so hard to have an event. It's so hard to do anything. I mean, you even go into businesses and try to pass out a flyer, and they look at you cross-eyed. So we with very little advertising, with very little effort. As of today, Jeremiah, we've already raised $15,000.
Yeah.
I do have some paid advertising coming out. Sterile Bay News, today's paper, we have an ad in there. We have an ad in 2 weeks in the Sterile Bay. Morro Bay Life, when you will get on
December 1st. We also have a paid ad. And then I'm doing a direct mail campaign right now as we speak to various individuals. Believe it or not, you know, the friends over the 5 years that we've been in existence, we've probably been able to raise close to $75,000 and fund various items and various goals for the harbor department. I mean, we just finished purchasing the solar-powered emergency phone. I also still have some money for the third lifeguard tower. So we do have a lot of people that care about the harbor, believe it or not. I mean, I'm just amazed that I get checks in the mail for, you know, $3,000-$4,000. And it's stunning. So I'm hoping that we won't have a problem. 100,000 is a lofty goal, but we don't have to raise it in the next couple months. But I think we need to make a pretty good effort. And Jeremiah, I'd love to talk to the Fishermen's Association. I don't even know if you have any meetings. As you well know here, this is my first Zoom meeting, and I guess I didn't do very well since I can't even hook onto it. But I guess I'm going to have to get a little bit more computer literate and do some more outreach and stuff like that. But I will report back to the Harbor Advisory Board probably in 2 months, and I'll tell you what my my status is and what how we've been doing. And please reach out to the public, reach out to your friends and supporters, and have them go to our website, have them call me, have them call Becca. Becca is helping me with this at the Harbor Department. And if you have any specific questions or any ideas, just let us know.
I have a question on this topic.
Hi, Lynn.
Hi, Bill. Do you have you set up anything where groups can collect money and donate it, getting a larger sum, and then have some kind of recognition for that group?
Well, one of the ideas that I wanted to do a soft opening for a while, and I really want to work out what I'm doing right now with my mail campaign and then my advertising campaign. And at the end of the year, which is only 2 months away, then I'm going to design something depending on my goals. And we're going to probably get some major donors to try to donate money to put their names on the boat and put a whole campaign together on that and specifically go to some people. So that's kind of my idea. But no, I'd be more than happy. I mean, I could, you know, talk to the Rotary and some other types of groups. But to be honest with you right now, Lynn, there's a lot of groups that are really underfunded. The nonprofit organizations right now with this whole COVID is just, it's a mess.
I agree. That's very true. But a Harbor Patrol boat from Morro Bay is a rather special kind of need. And
exactly, as you can see,
Morro Bay people would be willing to gather money together. I think maybe the yacht club could do something like that. And so some little point of recognition for that would be a nice thing.
I would more than happy. I did reach out to Dana, and he, I think, reached out through a newsletter. I don't know. I did get a fairly large donation from one of the yacht club members, so he must have at least called it out. But if you can share with me how I could maybe get this flyer, a Harbor Patrol fundraiser, to all the members of the yacht club, because they're the ones that are going to benefit, and they're the ones that really need this. This is an essential.
Exactly.
It's an essential piece of equipment for their livelihoods, your livelihoods. So, I'd be more than happy to, you know, or if you could help me, you know, in that respect, that would be great. Just give me a call, and I'd meet you at the yacht club, and we can put together some flyers and some campaigns and stuff like that.
Okay, we'll talk, Bill. Thank you.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Okay. Anybody else from the board on this agenda item?
No.
Bill, thank you very, very much for taking the time. And clearly, there's lots of opportunities to help in a variety of ways for any interested individual or organization. Raise $40,000 and put your name on an engine.
Well, all right. Well, okay.
Bill, I had an idea before this to do something like the Harbor Walk of Lights for around the Christmas time. I don't know how it could necessarily work into a fundraiser, a money raiser, but I'd be interested in talking to you and making it so like a lot of the shops and restaurants around the waterfront, they'll put up your flyer, they'll collect money, either do something like a silent auction or like a walk where they stop by, but something that benefits everybody. And then another way to capture any money that they want to put towards the boat. Different.
Well, I will. I'll give you a call. One of the things we're going to do on the South Tee Pier, because of the, you know, all the construction and the harbor office and stuff, it's going to be a little bit hard to go to the North Tee Pier and that area. We're going to put the crab pot tree on the South Tee Pier. We're going to have a thermometer. I mean, it's, you know, I don't know. I don't think it's hokey. And so we're going to really let people be aware of what we're doing here. And I think if we could get something together, the problem that we're having is that the city of Morro Bay is not allowing any permits for any type of activities, nothing. And you have to have a permit to do anything. So that's the dilemma that we're trying to face to a certain extent.
Gotcha.
You know, I mean, I'd love to do it, but you'd have to have a permit to do it. And as from what I've understood, the city of Morro Bay is not doing any permits until July 1st, 2021. I know how ludicrous that may sound, but that's their policy right now, and that's what they're saying.
Okay. Not permits for events that create gatherings.
Correct. Yeah.
I mean, there's a few things that can fit, but not many.
So okay. I was just spitballing ideas.
Okay, folks, we're gonna wrap this up.
Okay.
All right. Well, listen. Give me a call. My number is on the website. Or give Becca a call, and then thank you very much, and have a good meeting, guys. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Bill.
Bill.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Bill.
Okay.
Are you still there?
Yes.
Okay. So if a member of the public was watching this meeting or will watch it in the future, and they wanted to send a check somewhere,
where? Right there on the flyer. It's to contribute by check, please send to the Friends of the Morro Bay Harbor Department, P.O. Box 718, Morro Bay, California, 93443.
Sure.
Go online.
And if it happens when they don't happen to have the flyer at hand, then they can contact the Harbor Department. Is that correct?
That is correct. And the Harbor Department's number is area code 805-772-6254. We are a 501(c) charitable donation, tax ID 47-225-2393. This would be a great contribution for end of year giving.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Thank you now. Bye-bye.
Okay. So that brings us to B1, update from the Boatyard Marine Services Facility Ad Hoc Committee on the committee's recent activities. The chair is Mr. McClish, who's not with us this evening. Does anybody have anything to contribute to this agenda item? Okay, well,
wait, Boatyard Marine.
What?
I might have something to add to this because it's something I omitted, and it kind of goes in with B1. I omitted today that I attended at 10 o'clock today the installation of the new president of Morro Bay Maritime Museum.
Oh.
So Our new president is Scott Natter for the Maritime Museum, and they have some terrific additions down there, a nice patio that they installed. They've got the Spindrift down there, and it's been completed and so forth. So they've done a tremendous amount of work, tremendous amount, and I just wanted to pass on that Scott Natter is currently the president.
Okay. Thank
you. That's kind of the boatyard. It's adjacent to it. So.
Sort of, kind of, you know.
Yeah.
Okay, so that brings us to B2, which is an update from the Finance and Budget Ad Hoc Committee and the committee's recent activities. Mr. Leckford, you are the chair.
Yeah, and we have no recent activities to speak of. Eric, do you have anything to add?
No, nothing new, other than just getting through the budget year and COVID.
Any questions from the board or comments on B2? Eric, that Measure E and the city represented in its solicitation for Measure E that that infrastructure and public safety were elements of their desires. If you have any ideas about this, when would the Harbor Department know whether any proceeds would come its way for either public safety and or infrastructure, harbor infrastructure from Measure E?
So the measure looks to have passed. Election results aren't completely official, but it looks to have passed. If it's passed, revenues, I believe, will not start flowing until April of next year. That's when it kicks in. I would anticipate the budgeting of those revenues will get factored into or get wrapped into next year's budgeting, which starts in March-ish, February, March, when we start penciling things out and getting with finance. That our finance director moved on to Truckee may throw a little bit of a monkey wrench into it. Depending on when that gets replaced and how the new person lands on their feet and runs with the ball. So we'll see. But I would anticipate that the budgeting of those funds and how they're going to split it up and where it goes will get part of the budgeting process next spring.
Okay. Hmm. Anything else from the board on B2?
No.
Okay. Brings us to B3. B3, consideration of Harbor Advisory Board member assignments for public engagement opportunities. Eric?
Thank you. So this is an item off of the future agenda items list that was to consider voluntary Harbor Advisory Board member assignments to become sort of information conduits. I'm not sure if liaisons is the right word, but become a information and conversation conduit between various organizations or entities or groups or agencies in order to increase the Harbor Advisory Board's public engagement, both to and from the board. So, potentially bringing information to a body and then bringing that body's reaction or input back to the city, to the Harbor Advisory Board, back to the Harbor Advisory Board. So in the staff report, I put a sort of a running list of things that I came up off the top of my head, just potential organizations or entities that could be served in such a manner. If we enact something like this, I think it could increase the Harbor Advisory Board outreach and communications and maybe our effectiveness. I think that was the idea of it, with the effectiveness to those bodies. So in no real particular order, I listed the Planning Commission, Yacht Club, Chamber of Commerce. You can see them there. I don't need to read through every single one. It's definitely not all inclusive, but I tried to cover everything from operational stuff to environmental stuff to regulatory planning commission stuff. It's kind of it. It's, you know, if we enact it, I don't know that we'd need a how we'd handle it if we try to do it on some sort of a subcommittee basis, or if we just maybe it becomes part of the announcements when information comes back. Obviously, if it's information flowing back and forth on a particular issue or agenda item, we would bring it in that, but we'd have to sort of develop what our protocols would be so we keep some sort of control and structure to this, and it's not just a complete freeform. So I'll leave it, but throw it back to the board here and for discussion, and see where it goes and see where we might be able to take this.
Is this just dealing, Eric, with public outreach? Is that what basically what you're looking for there?
I think largely, and obviously for you, I mean this is, you know, some of you represent specific constituency. Jeremiah, you represent the commercial fishermen. Charisse, you're leaseholders. Gene, I think you're South Bay. Mark at large, Ron at large. So some of you already have specific constituencies. So obviously, and you already do that. I mean, that's part of your job as being a Harbor Advisory Board member is reaching out to that constituency you represent. I see it being much the same. You're just kind of reaching out a little broader to some other entities.
Jeremiah, just a second.
The purpose of this is to allow the Harbor Advisory Board to communicate to and to communicate with other entities about harbor issues. That's the principal purpose of it. Or to bring back to the Harbor Advisory Board harbor-related issues that some other group or entity might have. That's the purpose of it. So it is sort of ex officio, if you will. I don't personally think, although I will bow to the board, certainly, I don't think that this is something that we need to motion to approve. What I would suggest to the board is that I will poll the existing board and ask them if they think this this concept has value. And if, in fact, a majority of the board thinks that it has value, then I will take, first of all, I will ask after that, I will ask if there's any other entity that anybody suggests be put on the potential target list. And then after this meeting, over the next 2 weeks or 3 weeks or whatever, I will contact each board member and ask them if they have an interest in being a liaison or a conduit. I like Eric's word of conduit because it's ex officio to a particular organization or organizations. I don't see any reason why a board member couldn't take on two or three of these, because we're not talking about a lot of time.
So let me
poll the board and see what the interest is. And Jeremiah, I'll start with you.
Okie doke. Well, you know, is whether or not it needs a motion, I'm not sure. But for me, I do a lot of that anyway, but I have rarely incorporated the Harbor Advisory Board in any of my discussion. So the Rotary Club is a good example. I've spoken in front of the Rotary, probably a half a dozen times, and over the years, you know. And but not necessarily in the Harbor Advisory Board. So all I was going to say is, for me, and everybody's different naturally, but I'll just look at this perhaps as business as usual with the addition of adding plugs for the Harbor Advisory Board and explaining to people they, you know, can get in touch with the board and question things or get in touch with the board members and ask about what's going on or so forth.
Well, I would prefer, because I think it's more structured and more readily tracked by the board and by individual board members. I would prefer if a board member said, "You bet, I will coordinate with the Morro Bay Planning Commission. I will reach out to the chair of the Morro Bay Planning Commission, let them know that through me, the Harbor Advisory Board is interested in determining what issues the Planning Commission might be thinking about as far as the harbor is concerned, and I will, whoever it is, the board member will in turn communicate to the Planning Commission what we think the issues are as they relate to the Planning Commission. That's the way I would prefer to do it. Otherwise, it's too amorphous.
Yeah. So going through, I missed, I'm sorry, I'm dense, I guess. I missed the relationship with the Planning Commission.
There is no relationship with the Planning Commission at this point in time. I'm talking about, so all right, this is too much discussion. We need a motion on this in order to have this discussion. And somebody would like to formulate a motion relative to consideration of Harbor Advisory Board member assignments for public engagement opportunities.
Go ahead, Lynn.
I would like to make such a motion. I think this is a great idea. I would like to make a motion that we establish a more formal relationship with various groups in Morro Bay to invite their comments about Harbor Advisory Board issues.
Before I ask for a second, I might suggest that you modify your motion to not restrict it to the Harbor Advisory Board, but harbor related.
Very good.
Okay, and also your motion said groups in Morro Bay.
They could be outside of Morro Bay, yeah.
Okay, so why don't you restate your motion for us, please?
Well, if I had written it down, I could, but I didn't.
Lynn, do you mind if I take a stab at it?
Sure. No, I don't mind at all.
Sure. I would like to make the motion that we explore assignments of Harbor Advisory Board members for public engagement opportunities over the next meeting, for the next meeting.
Let me just do it now.
What's that?
We can't do it now?
We can't discuss it right now without a second.
Well, I'll second it.
Okay, so moved and seconded. So discussion, Charisse?
Do we want to just go down the list and see who wants to take the particular groups?
I think that puts people on the spot. I'm more than happy to work my way through the board. If we call this motion and it gets approved, then I'm more than happy to reach out prior to the next meeting and to see which board member might be interested in becoming a conduit to a particular organization or organizations or entities. And I'll start with you if the motion's approved. I will call you.
Yes, that sounds like a good, because I kind of put my name towards a couple of them, so.
Good, delight.
I am into doing it this evening if possible.
Okay. Any other discussion on this motion?
Yes, I have a discussion.
Please.
It seems like you have a very broad range that you're trying to reach to. I'm not sure that you can, you know, address everybody at one time or everybody with the Planning Commission. That's a direct entity, but the rest of it, it seems like it's too general. So,
well, let's take one for instance. The Morro Bay Chamber of Commerce, I mean, to your point, Gene, the Morro Bay Chamber of Commerce has a board.
Yes, that's a particular entity.
Okay, pick a different one. Pick one that you have a concern about in the sense that you're talking about.
I don't have the list in front of me.
Okay. Well, I think there's ample opportunity. Your point's taken. Thank you. I mean, I understand.
I think over the next month we can refine the list by find some additional opportunity, and you know maybe even you know trim this down to where it would be you know workable to have this in a much more formal view next month.
Well, I'm happy to put it on the agenda for next month to review where we are with it.
My motion was to make the assignments next month.
That's
following. It's following. Following board engagement with you.
That's fine. So I will still poll the board to determine where interests lie, and then we can formalize if you so choose during the next month's meeting.
Exactly.
Okay. All right. So, and that was the intent of your motion?
Yes, sir.
Okay. And it was moved and seconded. Any other discussion? All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? None. Motion carries. Thank you. So that takes us to B4, identification of responsible parties for cleanliness of waterfront ground leases, public restrooms, light posts, and concern for public safety. Wow. Mr. Andersby?
Yeah, it's quite the mouthful, although it's only two lines. I've seen some longer ones than that. So this is another one off of the future agenda items list. It's really mostly a discussion and information item. Our advisory board previously declared this. Who's responsible for doing what? I think this probably came out of a restroom discussion of months and years past of, how do we get the restrooms cleaner and trash picked up better? So I got a running list here of, basically who's responsible for everything in a general sense. So on all the city's lease sites, which are all the properties on the west side of Embarcadero, the master leaseholder, as we know, is responsible for the maintenance upkeep of the lease site and the premises and the bushes and the trash and everything on the lease site. As we know, we just did the lease policy update. In that lease policy update, it extends those leaseholders' responsibility to other things they may affect in their normal business operations. The example we always used was the pathway that they push their dumpster out to the street for the trash truck to get to it. If they somehow damage or stain or sully the pathway to the street that's not necessarily on their lease site, they need to clean it up. So we memorialize that in the policy itself. So a lot of our leaseholders have subtenants. They're not the owners themselves, and so they put that on the subtenants and charge them CAM fees, common area maintenance fees, or charge them CAM fees to do that. But otherwise, it's the master tenants and the subtenants that are responsible for the lease sites themselves and everything that goes on there, and that's why we have ground leases, so puts those leaseholders in responsibility for those. I'll probably stop at each one and see if there's any question or discussion on any of those.
Board comments on lease site maintenance questions? Okay, hearing none. Public restrooms.
So public restrooms, our facilities crews, which are under Public Works, are responsible for the maintenance upkeep on the restrooms through, with the use of our revenue, our funding, Tidelands Trust funding through the cost allocation, because as we know, we're in the Tidelands Trust fund and it's separate from the general fund. So we have to pay for general fund folks to come to our restrooms. We have six public restrooms on the waterfront. There's Tidelands down at the launch ramp, Tidelands Park. Centennial Parkway and the chessboard, basically. The Front Street parking lot over by the, well, I guess where the Surf Street stairs used to be, back behind by the Maritime Museum where the city's lift station is, probably a better description there. The North T Pier next to our office, in between our office and Krill's saltwater taffy. Coleman Park, which unfortunately now is currently condemned and fenced off because it was built in probably the 1950s or maybe before, and it's unreinforced masonry and it's got some pretty big cracks, so we unfortunately had to condemn that. And then the Rock restroom. So those are the six public restrooms that the city maintains. Many leaseholders, probably the majority of our leaseholders now, also have a requirement in their leases that they maintain public restrooms during business hours, for which they're completely financially and physically responsible for. And so between all those, we hope we have enough restroom services across the waterfront. All the porta potties you saw over the summer were mainly because of COVID. We put those in early because we ended up shutting down the public restrooms due to concern for public health and worker health, and those have slowly started to fade away and we're getting back to normal restroom service again. But that's basically the restrooms on the waterfront and who's responsible.
Questions, comments?
I will say that the private leaseholders have to pay an awful lot of money to maintain the public restrooms.
You mean the ones that they have in their own buildings?
That's correct.
Oh yeah, it's owning public restrooms is not a pretty thing.
There's an awful lot of water usage and trash pickup and very expensive.
There's a lot of vandalism, unfortunately. It's surprising how trash those get. In defense of our prison style restrooms that we and myself included have been critical of, they're that way for a reason because they're pretty bomb proof. Unfortunately, it's a lot of expense and time and effort for the leaseholders to deal with it.
Okay, anything else? Okay, parks.
Parks, public areas, rights of way, obviously, streets, it's the street crews. But in general, all of our parks, Tidelands Park, Coleman, the standard established city parks, it's again the facilities folks that take care of those, take care of the mowing of the lawns, maintenance of things that get broken. Rights of way, just public areas, streets and sidewalks. That's the city's facilities and streets crews. Again, anything, in the Tidelands Trust for the most part, parks are part of the cost allocation, but just general maintenance and paving, we don't have to pay anything extra for that. The taxes and whatnot, normal taxes go to pay for street maintenance, including that. Jobs outside their scope of capability, they'll contract out to private contractors to do stuff that they may not have the time or manpower to do. Our Harbor Patrol crew does some maintenance along the waterfront of some of these areas. And then our Harbor Maintenance Aide, who's now a volunteer, takes care of a fair amount of stuff up along the waterfront, trash, pickup, a little odd maintenance jobs here and there, little beautification jobs. So kind of a combination of folks, the facilities people and then our Harbor Department people. Questions on those?
Okay, next.
Light posts. So, the black light posts that are on both sides of Embarcadero, those are owned and operated by PG&E. The city pays a set contracted fee for those, and it's based on the wattage and the type of light. I've seen the list. It's pretty confusing, but it basically lists out each light and what type of lights in it and what the cost is. And so the city pays for all the street lights, not just on the Embarcadero, all the street lights you see up in town, the ones on power poles, those are all PG&E owned and operated, and the city pays a fee for those. And so we pay for the ones on Embarcadero on the west side on a contract basis. And so something's wrong with one, the light's out, basically need to call PG&E and notify them and hopefully they can come out and fix it. It's pretty standard. Cities up and down the state and probably across the nation, the utility provider provides those.
Eric, is there a number or a website that somebody can log on and make that complaint that there's a problem with the light in the light poles?
I'm sure there is, especially with all the fire PG&E's been under over utility issues and, you know, all the fires and exploding gas mains that have happened. I'm sure there's quite a robust system of reporting, because they, when something comes to their attention, they need to know about it quickly. So I would suspect there is. I know those of you who still use phone books, I know in the front of the phone book there's a PG&E number somewhere too, but yeah, I'm sure it's online.
I was just thinking specifically with regard to contact with regard to light posts in the city versus...
Yeah, there's nobody in the city per se. I mean, if someone were to come to us and say, hey, that light pole over by Great American Fish Company's burned out, we would probably figure out where the contact is and how to make the contact and let PG&E know. But yes, I'm sure there is somewhere online on PG&E's website a report a problem section to where you can do that.
Yeah. I have a comment, because this has happened with me. Like, I've called the city and said that PG&E actually responds more to the public calling. It goes on record, and so if anything does happen, they're legally bound to the fact that there was a call or there was a, you know, that they noted. If it comes from the city, it doesn't necessarily, I don't know, that's the way they made it sound, but after the whole fire issue, PG&E got a lot more responsive, and as soon as a private citizen called about the light post out in front of an area near my house, they were there like the next day fixing it. So
that might be very advantageous to share with the other tenants along the Embarcadero, if they noted that they can make that call directly, and that will be more responsive if they called than if they called the city.
Exactly. So I'm passing that on, and then I will, if anybody, when I encounter them, I will pass that on.
Thank you. Thank you for your engagement.
Okay, public safety.
Public safety. So I'll start on the lease sites. The leaseholders and the subtenants are responsible for security of their lease sites in a general sense, but in terms of crimes or people that are dangerous of some sort, obviously that falls to the police department, and to a lesser degree the harbor department, depending on what it is. You know, we're not armed and trained to respond to full policing matters, but we do tend to get involved and help the police department out on those. So you know, like most public safety issues, if there's a crime or immediate threat to life and health, you need to call 911 and get the police department and or fire department down there. On the water, of course, the Harbor Patrol is the primary responsible party. We do a fair amount of boating safety enforcement, but more so public safety in terms of medical aid and just general boating safety, with the help of the fire department, police department, and Coast Guard when we need it. But again, you know, crimes, obviously it's the Morbid Police Department that deals with most of those. And I don't know of any leaseholders that have a security person on site like you see in some of the bigger mall kind of places in San Luis. I don't think any of them have done that yet. Hopefully we never need it.
Okay, overall?
So just overall responsibility, you know, the police, fire, and harbor departments, you know, work as a team in concert and address, you know, whatever the issues are. We, you know, myself and Becca and our patrol officers, we work closely with Amy Watkins, the police commander and police chief, really almost on a daily basis, or the police officers, and the same with fire, depending on what the issues are. You know, we coordinate our efforts and doing, you know, rescues and medical aid responses, and then refine those efforts and to make sure we're getting the best bang for the buck for the public. But, you know, we do our best to provide the best public safety we can. And then, you know, overall responsibility on the waterfront, you know, for the lease sites, again, it falls on the leaseholder to maintain and upkeep their lease sites, but it falls on the city, on us, and the harbor department is the landlord to those leaseholders that they're complying with their leases and they're maintaining things and they're doing what they're supposed to do. We'll employ the assistance of other city departments, like maybe the city manager or the building inspector, if there's some more egregious issues that come to our attention, and the city attorney if need be, if we need to ratchet it up. But it's our department that's responsible for overseeing the lease sites and seeing the leaseholders are doing what they're supposed to do.
Okay, questions, comments from the board on this agenda item? Eric, this is very valuable information. On behalf of the board, I'd like to extend our gratitude to the Harbor Department for the time it took to put this together. And this answers quickly and concisely lots of different questions that are asked from time to time by the public. My suggestion is that this, if it isn't already in some clear and concise form and simple form like this, that this be put on the city website.
Okay, maybe I'll talk with you offline about that, but
yeah,
that's okay.
Okay, so that brings us to the declaration of future agenda items. Does any board member want to declare a future agenda item at this time?
I'd like to ask that we now remove the identify review responsible parties item from that list, just as a matter of housekeeping.
Excellent idea.
We've got both those members. B3 and B4 were future agenda items off the list. So
there we go.
Remove both of those.
Okay, thank you. Anything to add? Okay, not at this time. So that brings us to adjournment.
I had one thing COVID related that wasn't necessarily an announcement related to HAB. Can I take this time before you do adjournment?
Okay.
Okay. COVID related, right now they're giving, if you give blood, they're testing your blood to see if you have the antibodies to it. And I just wanted to let people know that that's an actually really valuable thing, because the more I find out about it, the more Morro Bay residents have found out that they have the antibodies and that it was actually here between December and February. So if anybody is interested in finding out if they have the antibodies, they can go and give blood, they test it, and they will find out if they have the antibodies.
Right, and where is the easiest and closest place for somebody who lives in Morro Bay to give blood?
Vitalant, it's in San Luis Obispo on Broad Street.
And say the name again, please.
Vitalant.
Vitalant.
Yeah. I'll look at that.
The blood bank at Tank Farm Road and Broad Street.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Okay, anything else?
No, thank you.
Sure. Mm-hmm. So, motion to adjourn.
I second.
Actually, I didn't move it.
I would move to adjourn.
No, okay. Is there a second?
Second.
Okay, moved and seconded. Any discussion? Okay, hearing none. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? None. Thank you all very, very much, and thank you for the public that's paying attention to this.
Ryan, I'm going to bring you that book tomorrow afternoon.
All right. Well, you can't do it because I'm not there.
I'll stick it in your mailbox.
Well, why don't you hang on to it, and I'll let you know when we're back.
Okie doke.
All right.